Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Hey everybody, welcome to Metallicast, the Metallica podcast. I am your host and fellow Metallica fan. My name is Brandon. This is part 10 of Metallicast Black Summer. Hard to believe that we have already gone 10 weeks. We're looking at the last track today, The Struggle Within. And when I say we, I'm talking about a person who was... Well, outside of my cousin, who does not count as a human being, he was the first guest on Metallicast back last summer when I was doing the In Summer for All series. He came on to talk about one of his favorite tracks, a song that he will tell you is the most underrated Metallica song in their catalog, Eye of the Beholder. Today, he joins me for his second round on Metallicast to talk about The Struggle Within. Kevin Van Dam, welcome back to the show, bud.
Appreciate it, man. Glad to be here.
You always provide great insight, so I'm excited to have you on for this epic finale.
Oh, I don't know how epic it's going to be, but we'll see.
Well, let's start at the beginning for you. I know, I'm pretty sure last time you were on, we talked a little bit about how you got into the band and stuff, but let's talk specifically about the Black Album. It's okay if we go a little bit into about when you got into the band again. It's been so long. You might have to refresh my memory, never mind the listeners. But sort of what's your initial Black Album memory in terms of discovering it, hearing it, your thoughts, your opinions?
Well, I would love to say that I was like in line to get it when it came out and I got the cassette and put it in and it blew my mind, but I was only 5 at the time, so that didn't happen. by the time I got into Metallica, it was about 2003. It was about Saint Anger time. So the Black Album had, you know, burrowed its way into the general consciousness of the music scene. And, you know, you probably hear Enter Sandman 100 times and never really know that it's happened until you really get into the band and go, okay, that's Metallica. But, exactly. You know, I grew up in the Napster days, so I kind of got a smattering of everything. But the Black Album stuff was really the portal that got me into Metallica. And then once I bought Live Shit, that thing blew my mind. And then I was a Metallica diehard ever since then. So that was about 2003, 2004 when I really, really got into the band.
Nice. And the Black Album, I think, is, you know, I think a lot of people say that's sort of a gateway drug into not just Metallica, but into heavier music in general. It's just for somebody who might not have listened to that style of music or been exposed to that style of music, in so many ways, it's the perfect entry point for somebody.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I grew up listening to classic rock stations when I was in my dad's car or like Christian radio stations when I was riding in my mom's car. So that was like what I was exposed to. But the great thing about the Black Album is like I could put that on and my dad could listen to it and he'd be like, that's pretty good. I like that. Like you can get almost anybody into Metallica with the Black Album. So there's something magic about it.
Yeah, it's true. And I remember, you know, as a kid having Metallica playing in the house or being in the car. And, you know, if a song like Enter Sandman came on or The Unforgiven or Nothing Else Matters, my parents could tolerate it, appreciate it, I think like it to a on a certain level, as opposed to, you know, when I had Dyer's Eve on, or I remember, since you mentioned getting into the band during Saint Anger time, I remember coming home with Saint Anger the first day, putting that on my bedroom full blast, listening to the album for the first time, and my mom calling up to me, asking me what the hell I was listening to and being very confused when I said Metallica, which ironically is probably the reaction diehard Metallica fans also had throughout that time. So it was not just my mom, but it's just a funny juxtaposition. And, you know, to the Black Album, definitely, it's become just a part of popular culture at this point. It's and I've said this before, but it's just for me personally, that was my entry point to the band. I was very young when the album came out in 1991, but I had two older brothers, and I remember seeing the Into Salmon video, and I've gone through the story, but you know, that was my entry point. That was my gateway drug into this band, into heavy music. And I feel like a lot of people can relate to that.
Oh, for sure. And the people who get upset about it, that made Metallica like super, super popular. Like, I get where they're coming from. Like, they want their underground metal band to stay their underground metal band. But
yeah,
I mean, you want your band to be successful, right? And now they're ultra successful and selling out all over the place. And now they're doing another Black Album-esque type length tour, because it's been like almost 3 years now since Hardwired came out. And they're still going strong.
Yeah, and they just recently announced South America for 2020, so they're not slowing down anytime soon.
No, it'll be crazy. It'll be great, though.
I agree. That's one of those reasons why, you know, that people are like, oh, I wish Metallica would release an album more than every 8 years, and I absolutely agree with those people. But it's like, well, they toured for 4 of those years, they took 6 months off, and then they did, like, you know, a movie, and then whatever, God knows what else, you know? It's like, now they've been touring nonstop, and now they're doing S&M 2, and now it looks like that's gonna be in movies for a night, which I'm assuming will also lead to a Blu-ray and hopefully a CD. And you know, it's just, there's so many things that happen in that amount of time with this band that, yeah, I want new music more frequently, but the 8 years kind of flies by, because it's not like it's 8 years of silence.
No, it's not like Kirk's out there surfing and James is out there killing elk in Colorado where I'm at right now. It's not that. They're doing stuff.
Yeah. It's not like we're sitting back waiting for Chinese Democracy or some long rumored mythical album, you know.
Yeah.
They're working.
I always say, at least they're not Tool.
Right. Well, that's the perfect example. It's, you know, Tool, is the album out now or it's just about to come out? But like,
it's going to come out on the 30th. I don't know when you're going to release this, but it's a couple days out now.
Yeah, so I think it'll be out the same day as this episode, because I think the 30th is Friday. So so it'll be out the same day as this episode. So, by the way, definitely do not listen to the new Tool album. Just download and listen to Metallicast. At least listen to this first.
Tons of good content coming out on Friday, people.
Yes. That's the perfect example, because, I mean, I'm not a big Tool fan. I definitely appreciate them. I definitely, you know, like some of their stuff, but I haven't done the full, dive in as like a Tool fanatic. But I get the appeal, and I get the rabidness of that fan base. And I'm glad I'm not one of them, because it would drive me fucking nuts.
Yeah. But the thing about Metallica is, like, I don't know if this is true for you, but it's more like, oh, that's a really awesome surprise when you hear that a new Metallica album is going to come out. Because, like, they already have a pretty big catalog of stuff you love. So I remember when Death Magnetic came out, I was like, oh, yeah, this is going to be awesome. And then you know, the Hardwired announcement was, you know, dropped or whatever, I was like, hey, that's awesome. Like, all for it. I wasn't like, when is Metallica going to make a new album? Like, I'm still listening to Master of Puppets like it's the first time.
Well, that's very true for me, too. And I think, too, to tie in with that, that's also part of the reason why each Metallica album feels like an event. Like, I know they're my favorite band, so it's going to feel like an event for me, but it's presented like an event. Like, I remember hearing, just as the most recent example, Hardwired for the first time, and you know, and then everybody, the family, friends, you know, everybody's talking about the track, and then slowly but surely you hear, you know, a couple more songs, and then they start dropping the videos like days before the way it's all rolled out, it just felt like an important thing when so many other metal bands, Megadeth. it's like, you know, every 6 months I feel like there's a Megadeth album, and if you're a fan, then you're like, cool, and if you're not a fan, you don't notice. And that's, I mean, I obviously I'm gonna I said it as a knock, but truthfully it's not really a knock, it's just that Metallica is a bigger band, and they are, you know, and it's an event, much like the new Tool album was, or like the new Slipknot album was. Like, for fans of that band, it's an event, and for, like, even if you're not a fan of those bands, you can't ignore it. Like, if you're at all paying attention to what's going on in music, especially hard rock and metal, you know that Slipknot has a new album. You know that Tool has a new album. It's the same way Metallica has a new album. Like, you're going to know it's going to be an event. It's going to be a big deal. It's going to be big news. And they're just going to be all over the place for, well, anywhere from 6 months to 4 years later.
Yeah, exactly. And that's probably why Metallica is the band that it is and how much success they've had. Like, they have a marketing mind. I don't know if it's, you know, Q Prime Management or Lars or whoever it is, but they also, like, change it up and try and do new stuff, like doing a music video for every single song on the album and, like, releasing them all. Like, I forget how they rolled it out, like, one after the other, day after day. I was in Iraq at the time, so I was kind of behind, but it was, you know, still awesome. It was a big event. So
they're
real smart in that respect.
Oh, totally. And, you know, it's, they give you enough of a tease, and then they give you enough of a taste, and then it just keeps you wanting more until you can finally get your hands on the final product. And, I mean, it's funny because I just did a long car drive a couple weeks ago, and I was listening to Hardwired, and I was like, oh, it's been like 3 months since I've listened to this record. It's been so long. And I was like, and it's still so good.
It is really good. It's really stood the test of time. Like, for whatever reason, Death Magnetic didn't have that draw to a lot of people, but Hardwired definitely does.
Yeah. I think part of it is, I say this as somebody who really liked Death Magnetic, Hardwired feels like a more natural record, and it just has more punch. And to me, I think it's their best produced album outside of the Black Album.
Yeah, I agree.
And I said this on a past episode, but I heard, I think it was of Wolf and Man, when Tommy Trink, I don't like mentioning that name on air, but when Tommy Trink was on the show, I listened to a Wolf and Man for the episode, and then The Day That Never Comes came on after, and I was like, you could hear the difference, you know, in the production. But
absolutely,
Death Magnetic has more thin sound. It sounded more like an Injustice for All production, whereas I feel like on Hardwired, it sounds well balanced. It sounds really warm. It sounds, you have the high end and the low end in all the right places at all the right times, and it's just really well put together.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So where does, as somebody who kind of came into the band later in their career, and, you know, using the evil Napster machine, shame, shame.
I know. Sorry, Lars.
He forgives you. But he's listening. He just texts me. He forgives you. But,
I've gotten enough enhanced experiences at the concerts. I should have made up for it.
Yeah, seriously. You know, hundreds to thousands of dollars in concert tickets later.
Yeah, exactly.
But so obviously at some point you went back and experienced the albums from start to finish. Do you remember, not to put you on the spot, do you remember kind of when you heard the Black Album from start to finish and what your initial thoughts were of it as like a cohesive unit?
That is a good question. I think at the time...
I really put you on the spot for this one.
Yeah. I think at the time, just given my, introduction to Metallica, I was probably like, all right, I really like the hits, you know, Sandman, Sad But True, Unforgiven, you know, that solo is amazing, and that was probably my favorite song for a long time. Totally. But as an album, I probably wouldn't have put it very high. I think a lot of people are that way. Like, the Black Album has a bunch of mega hits, but as an album, it doesn't rank as high on people's lists as you might expect.
Yeah,
like right now, Justice is my favorite album, and then Puppets, and then it goes from there. The Black Album's probably in the middle somewhere, but that changes day to day.
Yeah, Which I've heard, for me personally, I would put the Black Album in my top three, maybe as my second favorite, but a large part of that is for sentimental reasons, because it was the first Metallica album I heard. It's the album I've listened to the most, because there was a period of time when I was a young kid where I thought that was the only Metallica album that existed, and I just listened to it on my Walkman on a freaking loop. So like that album now is part of my DNA. I feel like I know every note and every word and just every single part of all those songs, more so than the other records, which I've listened to a bunch of times. You know, and Master Puppets my personal favorite, but I think I'd put the Black Album very closely behind it, but again, mostly because of sentimental reasons. And I think one of the big complaints the Black Album gets, and I know there's a lot of people that would disagree and a lot of people that would agree, but there's people who say, you know, it has five classic tracks. I mean, there's no denying that, whether you like the songs or not, they're classics. They're huge hits. But outside of those, it's a mixed bag. You know, there's some people, and I'm just saying this play more like devil's advocate also, but there's people say, you know, it's got some filler on there. It's got some forgettable songs, you know. That is a complaint that you hear about this record sometimes, where you really do not hear that about the first four records.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And I think that's what I was saying. Like, everybody knows the mega hits, but then everything else just sort of fades into the background. And I don't think they're bad songs by any means. I don't think they're really filler. But, you know, they're just so overshadowed by these things that just, like, changed music in the early 90s. So,
yeah,
you know, it's tough to compete with Enter Sandman. I don't care what song it is.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And when Richard S.E. was on to talk about Holier Than Thou in Part 3 of Black Summer, that's something one of us mentioned it. I'll say me. I'll take credit for it because it's my show. But, you know, it's sort of a... I would say the song gets lost because, I mean, more than any other song on the album, that's sandwiched between four of the biggest metal songs of all time. Like, at least the rest of the songs have a little bit more of a breathing space, because there's a couple tracks before you get to Nothing Else Matters. But, like, you have Sandman, Sad But True, Holier Than Thou, Unforgiven, Wherever I May Roam. It's like... That song does not stand a chance.
Yeah, exactly. And that was part of my argument for Eye of the Beholder. It's like it's sandwiched between these other tracks that sort of overshadow it, and I think it gets lost. And I also have the same contention about Atlas Rise, because they haven't played it in Europe so far. So I think that's kind of the Eye of the Beholder of Hardwired, which makes me sad.
Yeah. I do like, though, the recent, just to go a little bit off track here, the recent additions to the set list as they wrap up the European run, get ready for SNM2. And I gotta give Nick Markowiak credit for this. Back before the European run started, he said, watch what songs they play, because it's gonna give us insight into what they play for SNM2. And I mean, so far they've pulled out Call of Cthulhu, they've pulled out The Outlaw Torn. Those are not coincidences. Yeah. They're coming back for SNM2 for sure. Those are like almost a guarantee at this point.
Yeah, I believe it. I would be pretty upset if Outlaw Torn didn't make SNM2.
Yeah, especially since they pulled it out. It's like, why are you teasing us without the symphony? Play it with the symphony. Then, you know, you're going to have... But then it makes other song suggestions interesting. It's like, well, I would be surprised for them to choose a St. Anger song, but they've been playing Frantic and St. Anger this whole time. So do they do one of them? Do they do both of them? They've been doing the God That Failed a lot, so is that going to be a deep cut to pull out for SNM2? Like, all these kind of tracks that seemed random at first have become consistent parts of it, consistent parts of their set list. But then it's also like, well, maybe they thought a St. Anger song would translate better for the European audience more than like the American audience, where the album, you know, did not sell as well, or, you know, has more of a bitter reaction towards it or whatever. Yeah. I know there's a whole variety of things to go into, but I'm like, it'll be interesting to see that set list, it's coming up really quick here. It's September next week.
So. What is it, the 9th? Yeah, it's pretty quick.
It's like in the next couple weeks. I don't know what date it is right now, but it's in the next week or two. And, So it'll be really interesting to see what songs come through for that.
Yeah, I'm not going to expect a Saint Anger track. That just might be my my bias that I don't want to hear one. But, you know, it is cool that they
pulled Richard out a couple deep cuts. I will edit that part out.
Sorry, Richard. I'm one person you can't convince, though I respect your view. But, the European audiences do get more and different deep cuts than the American audiences, whatever reason.
That actually ties
into Struggle Within, because they did a whole kind of mini run of playing the whole Black album as a part of their set. Yeah. But that was only in Europe and the Orion Festival.
So let's start getting into this song a little bit now that we're 20 minutes into this thing. Usually I do the live stats later, but there's no rhyme or reason to what we do here on Metallicast. So let's jump into it. It's only been played 17 times. Which I was not surprised by the number, because I know this is a rarely performed song. What kind of took me aback, though, was that, and as I thought about it, it made sense, but what surprised me at first, because I sort of forgot, was that all 17 of those times was in 2012 when they were playing the Black Album to celebrate the 20th anniversary. So was never played for the first 20 years and has not been played since 2012. So it's kind of funny that 20 years later they played it 17 times in 1 year, and then we're like, all right, no more.
Yeah, it's really, really crazy. And if you pull up the details on that show in Prague, which is where they started doing that, they debuted Struggle. That was also the same day they debuted My Friend of Misery and Don't Tread on Me. So that was the first time for both of those songs as well.
Yeah. Because it was just last episode and I already forget, but I think My Friend of Misery was only like 10 times. It was about the same number, you know? And I was like, oh, I that's a song I want to hear more of. But
you know what'll blow your mind is on this little mini tour where they played the Black Album back to front. They also played Hell and Back quite a bit. That's been played 16 times, and Struggle Within has been played 17. So pretty neck and neck.
That's pretty funny.
I'm not sure what that means.
And that must have been like a brand new song at that point, because that must have been right around what year is Beyond Magnetic? That's like a fuzzy album for me. That must have been around 2012, because Death Magnetic was 2008. Beyond Magnetic was like why I confuse this when that album came out, because they released the songs individually to fan club members, and that's how I got it. I got those songs like through the fan club, and then they packaged it later as the EP.
Yeah, I have trouble remembering, because the first time I heard a Death Magnetic song, I had XM Radio at the time, and they debuted Cyanide, like, for, the world premiere or whatever, and it was, like, a big event. So I was like, got to tune in and listen to that. So, yeah, I have the same problem as I tried to, put the mile marker down, and it's tough.
Yeah, somebody out there will be like, why are you hosting a Metallica podcast? You don't know the year of Beyond
Magnetic. Yeah, you idiots.
This, never listen to your show again.
Yeah, I've been to 150 shows, and I know Lars's mom. Like, what are you doing?
And while we're giving out stats, before we jump headfirst into the Struggle Within, before I forget, because I've been forgetting a lot, I said at the beginning of Black Summer that I would give my weekly report of where the Black Album is on the Billboard 200, and Kevin, I want to be honest with you. This podcast has a lot of pull, has a lot of power, and I'm happy to say that after 10 weeks looking at 12 tracks, the Black Album is still not in the Billboard 200. It was there for the first two parts, I believe, and then
it has pretty, not been pretty back good since. Run for something that came out in 1991. So
it'll be back. It was not in the Billboard 200 consecutively since
right.
But yeah, it's still funny that after all the times it has been in the Billboard 200 for like over 500 weeks. I don't know the exact number today, but I know it's for a fact like it's been over 500 weeks. That was a couple years ago, I think, when they made that announcement, that in the 10 weeks I've done this, only like two of them at the start was the album there.
I don't know if I was a member of Metallica, what I would do with that sort of information. Like, something you've made is like literally going to echo in eternity well past your death. Like, that's the route that's on.
Well,
I would have no idea what to think about that.
It's funny to me because a lot of times I'll see a post on Twitter or on Instagram from somebody like Brian Slagel or somebody like that. So sometimes he'll want to showcase, you know, a Metal Blade band and, you know, they debuted at number one or, you know, they're somewhere in the top five of like the iTunes metal charts, and Metallica will be there with them and with the Black Album. And it's, it's like, all right, so this brand new album's number one, Black Album's still number two.
Yeah.
Or I remember like when Hardwired came out, Hardwired was like number one, Black Album was like number three. And I want to say there was one or two other ones, like Justice and Puppets in the top 10, too. It's like, this is just, it's not even fair. It's not even a
good... No. No, it's not a fight.
But yeah, I swear to God, if the Black Album enters the Billboard 200 next week, when Black Summer's done, I'm still taking all the goddamn... credit.
Yeah, it's like an aggregate thing. You just got to get the ball rolling.
Right, exactly.
Then you'll see the results at the end.
Exactly. So let's jump into this song Once and For All. It's the closer on the record, obviously. It's the last track. Definitely one of the thrashier songs on the album. I hesitate to call any song on the Black Album thrash, because it's not thrash in the sense of Motor Breath or a Dyer's Eve, but definitely one of the thrashier, more up-tempo songs.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that first opening riff is really thrashy. It goes for about a minute, then they slow down before the chorus, and then it picks up again after that with that same riff. But yeah, there's some thrash elements in there, and probably one of the thrashier tracks on the Black Album. Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, what I like about this song... it has like that military intro, which is sort of, I feel like when you hear that, you expect it to be, you know, like a Don't Tread on Me or a song like, you know, Disposable Heroes or Confusion, like a song that's war themed. And it's not, and it's not, even though you could see it as, you know, I think the tie into that has to do, you know, the struggle within. It's not war, it's not army, but it's kind of a war in yourself. It's, you're kind of fighting yourself. And I think maybe that's the tie to it, or maybe I'm overthinking it, but it's my show, so I will overthink it.
No, but, as the guy who overthinks everything, especially Metallica lyrics, I'm with you on that. But I was trying to make sense of that myself. Like, it's not really the overt, you know, military drum intro segue into a, you know, a one or whatever. Like, it kind of has a disconnect there. So, and the crazy thing about that is that intro takes a little while, and this is a really short song. It's only 3 minutes and 53 seconds. Hardwired is 3:11. So I think if you took out that drum intro, they'd probably be about the same.
Yeah. And another thing I like about this too is that once they kind of move past like the military intro, and it kind of breaks into the riff, the vocals come in before the band's fully kicked in.
Yeah.
Which I always liked. It's like, I feel like it's, I cannot think of another song in their catalog where that's really the case. They have songs like Fuel where you hear the vocals first, and, you know, breaks in songs where the vocals by Carey, but nothing where you have like a heavy riffing behind it and then full speed ahead after the vocal as like part of the build.
Yeah. Nothing is coming to mind off the top of my head that's structured like that, but yeah, that's a good observation. I actually hadn't thought of it, But yeah, it's like James doing a riff and singing over it, and it's like he kicks in the door and then everybody flows in after him.
Right. And another thing that stands out to me about this song musically is this is going to sound like a knock against the song, and it's not. But it's almost I really like the start and stops. It's almost like amateurish in a sense because it's kind of like a cop-out transition into like to the next part, right? But I like it because, one, I think it's not because I couldn't think of a transition or write one. It's an intentional thing that they're doing as part of the song. But to me, it adds like to the punk thrash feel of it and kind of gives it more of a almost like old school Motorhead type song.
Yeah. Yeah, I can agree with that. I love when Metallica does like purposeful pauses in their music. Like probably the most famous one is Harvester, but there's a couple on like Death Magnetic. And I like when James pauses in this song and then just yells, "Go!" And then, you know, that's whenever James does that, you probably know a kick-ass riff is following. And right. That's actually my favorite part of this song because it's just this a little bit different riff from the main one. It only lasts about 10 seconds. It's right after the guitar solo. But I think that one, that riff is the best one in there. And I think it's really underappreciated, but I think Eye of the Beholder is underappreciated. So maybe I'm just out of the Metallica mainstream.
I really like the underground Metallica songs.
I'm a Metallica hipster.
No, all that's good points. And I think, what was I going to say? Completely lost my train of thought.
It happens.
But I'll circle back around. But yeah, it's just a really tight, concise like performance from the band. Oh, I know what I was going to say. That's one thing we've talked about a little bit on Black Summer on and off with the various guests that have been on is how on this album, the band, and I'm basing this off interviews I've read and quotes and stuff. They wanted to give the songs more space, more room to breathe. Whether it's, you know, the pause in Sad But True, like a literal break before you hear the doot, 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 right? Or, just other times like, you know, My Friend in Misery, where the bass line sort of carries through and the guitar sort of weaves in and out, and you have it's like those very subtle layers in the background. Like, there's a lot of different ways and a lot of different times where the songs breathe. I think the unique part about Struggle Within and how they do it is that you have those starts and stops, and that's really the only break that you get. There's not a It's not a groove-oriented song, really, other than maybe later on, like during the solo or after the solo. But it's just a very, like, as far as the Black Album goes, it's the most, like, balls-to-the-wall, foot-on-the-gas-pedal song, I think, on the whole record, even more so than the couple other kind of thrashier songs, like Through the Never or Holier Than Thou.
Yeah. I think Through the Never would probably be my preferred one, but I mean, the difference is minimal, you know, the distance between the two.
So, interesting fact about this song. This is not only the last track on the record, but it was, the story goes that it was written and sung during the band's last day in studio. This was the last song to be completed by the band for the record. It's funny because Interstamin was the first song that they started writing, and it ended up being the first song on the album, and The Struggle Within is the last one that was written for the record and the last one that appears. I'll read this quote that I found online. I apologize for not knowing the source. I try my best as a podcast professional. But the quote
I found the same fact, and I was trying to find the source as well. I didn't know if it was internet bullshit or like Metallica lore, but it's a good story.
Yeah, it is a good story. So it could be a BS story, but If somebody knows of the source, you know, we're all nerds out there, so let me know. Hit me up on social or what have you. But it says James Hetfield would run out of steam, and he is... let me back up. The Struggle Within was written and sung during the band's last day in studio. James Hetfield had run out of steam, and he has since admitted that The Struggle Within was the trouble he had coming up with the words for this song. With the benefit of hindsight, he also sees the song as indicative of the anger he was feeling at the time and his struggle to deal with it. Said Hetfield, "I'm no psychiatrist, but it's right there." So I thought that was an interesting tidbit of information. You know, he's struggling to write the lyrics, literally struggling, and then here's what's come out. When on paper, it just feels like he's venting.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't heard that little anecdote before, but the more I looked at the lyrics, I was like, that kind of makes sense. There's some sort of cliched language in there, which is not usually a Hetfield thing. So yeah. I can probably see that might be true. It's also got a pretty simple construction, as far as I can tell. A couple of verses, pre-chorus, chorus, a bridge in there. Yeah. But yeah, I could see that being like, man, we're really burnt out, but we have this and we're going to record it. Yeah, I gotta put something in there.
Well, it's funny you say like cliche language, because I kind of addressed that a little bit during My Friend of Misery. And My Friend of Misery is probably my favorite track on the Black album.
Oh, cool.
But my point was, there's a few parts on the Black album where you can tell that James Hetfield heard a line, and then he, rather than like on a Just For All, when he was watching the news and then would write lyrics about it, it's almost as if he was doing some kind of reading or whatever, or and he saw like kind of a famous line and then wrote a song about it. So like, yeah, whether it be, you know, Misery Loves Company and My Friend of Misery, or...
yeah, that one's too on the nose.
Yeah, or in The Struggle Within, you know, advantages are taken, not handed out, you know.
Yeah, kicking at a dead horse, boredom sets into the boring mind. It's, yeah, you know, a little varied, but you know, you kind of know it in the back of your mind, like that's come from some cliched phrase you've heard before.
Right. It's like he takes something that's been said billions of times before and just kind of twist it a little bit to make it to have the Hetfield flavor. Yeah.
Or, and he gets away with it because he can do that.
Right. Or, do not call me a conspiracy theorist. All I'm saying is, maybe, Dave Mustaine wrote the lyrics. Ow.
Yes, James Hetfield has some diary of Dave Mustaine's filled with lyrics, and that's what he uses.
So, this ties in with the lyrics. I was looking up information about this song online and in various sources I have, and I would say more so than any other song on the Black album, The Struggle Within, I found the least amount of information about.
Yeah, easily.
But I stumbled upon this article that, I'll give the source later. It's a little bit lengthy. I was like, I don't know if I'll read the whole thing, but I'll try. I think I'm going to read through the whole thing, but I'm going to try to do it quickly. Cool. And it basically, this is an article, and I'll say the website later, but it breaks down the lyrics of this song. And well, just listen for yourself. There's no doubt about it. Metallica is one of the hottest groups around. Oh, by the way, I'm not sure what year this is from either. I don't know if this is like Black Album's new or if this was written years later. But it says, there's no doubt about it. Metallica is one of the hottest groups around. No matter what the song, they really cook. But it's not just their sound that's great. Their lyrics really make you stand up and take notice. Their songs aren't just a bunch of shallow rhymes. They show that someone's been thinking. Metallica's The Struggle Within is typical of those songs. It says what we've all felt. They start off singing, reaching out for something you've got to feel, while clutching to what you had thought was real. They describe perfectly the struggle that we all go through. We're always on the make for something real, but when we get it, we're just not satisfied. Then, We cling hard to it while we search for the next thrill. Metallica said it perfectly. Our struggle to find reality is little more than a bunch of uppers and downers. One night we're drunk out of our mind and we feel like we're on top of the world. The next morning our head feels like the world's on top of it. One night we're with someone in bed who gave it to us good. Later we find out they gave us more than we wanted. Now we've got VD. And like Metallica, we ask ourselves, what the hell? What is it you think you're gonna find? Hypocrite. Boredom sets into the boring mind. What is it we think we're gonna find to cure our boredom? The search gets old real fast. There's something out there, but we don't know what it is. Maybe it's money, but then if it's money that makes life so wonderful, why are so many rich people unhappy? Why is their suicide rate higher than average? That's the struggle within. Maybe it's fame. Don't believe it. Lars Ulrich and James Hetfield have got that, and they still wrote this song. Fame does not satisfy the struggle within. What is it that we are struggling for to feel good enough about ourselves? Do we need to start helping little old ladies across the street and buying cookies from those poor little Girl Scouts? Is that what it's going to take? Don't count on it. Don't count on it. That's the struggle within. Is there an answer? Is life supposed to be meaningless? Or is that what we're missing? Meaning in life. Would it make a difference if we knew why we were put here and what we are supposed to be doing with our life? It sure would. Why are we here? Perhaps you've never thought about it before, but it's only natural that the one who made us for himself. Artists often create works of art for their own use. Inventors devise gadgets to simplify their lives, and students make their own jewelry in shop class. A divine being like God, who had the brilliance to design and create the atomic structure of the universe, and who had the power to pull it all out of nothing, would quite naturally have created us for himself, to serve him and be fulfilled by him. Now, many of us get uptight at the idea of living our lives for someone else. In fact, the very thought that we owe something to God just ticks us off. I mean, who does he think he is? God? Oops. Okay, so he is pretty powerful and could squash us like ants, and we probably are a real pain to him anyway. So how will living for him stop the struggle within? The struggle within is only a struggle for a right relationship with our Creator. It's only because things aren't right with him that inside we feel empty and alone. When we get things right with him, the search is over and the emptiness goes away. The things that once enslaved us will have lost their power. There's one problem. When we look to God for help, there's something that keeps us from him. You see, all of our running after what we want out of life is perceived by God as independence and rebellion. He created us to do his thing, but we have lived to do ours. It is, in fact, our self-oriented living that has brought us greater and greater emptiness. The self-oriented style of living God calls sin. It is our sin that separates us from God and keeps us from entering into a close relationship with him. And I'm going to stop there. It goes on and on and on about finding God or whatever. This is from familyministries.com. And I'm sharing yes. it not because I'm a religious man, because I am the opposite of a religious man, but just because I, that one stood out to me.
Mm-hmm. I found the same thing. If you search for struggle within, it's on the first page of search results.
Yeah, it wasn't, it did not take a lengthy research session for me to discover this. There's only so many results out there outside of lyric pages.
Yeah. That was yeah. interesting. It sounds like something I would have written in ninth grade when I went to a private school. So shout out David Lipscomb for all you Tennessee yeah. people.
I was trying to figure out if like David Ellison wrote it or what, but.
The singer for Slayer. I'm forgetting his name. Yeah. He's Catholic. Yeah. Probably would be like that.
Which brings me back to a point I've made before. I really want a Metallica tribute album. It could be the Black Album from start to finish, where it's just the rest of the Big Four singers and musicians playing these songs. Let's get Kerry King on lead guitar, where you just say, you know, like during the Unforgiven or something, you know?
I was going to say, if you want the Unforgiven sped up 50 times, then go for it.
But yeah, so just proves the one of the points we were making over Black Summer, that the lyrics of James Hetfield are universal, and even preachers are looking at the lyrics and I of finding ways to preach. That's about the nicest thing I can say about it.
Wait till they get a hold of now that we're dead.
Well, that's the thing too, is that I was like, wait, is there more examples like this out there? I need to find them if so, because it's a little bit it's a little bit fascinating. But yeah. So the struggle within.
Indeed. Youth pastor ministry. It's right there.
But familyministries.com is not the only ones we're going to hear from, Kevin. I want to share what Ralph Savetto wrote on FlickChat. Kevin, I don't like to call you out like this, but I've noticed you're not on FlickChat yet. Or are you?
I'm not. I haven't gotten it yet. I'm pretty sure I'm crushing it over there, and there's no room for me.
Oh, listen, KBD. Last week, Nick was on, and I had to shame him into joining. And I'm going to do the same for you.
I'll come back with receipts.
So, like every week, I made a call out to the Metallicast Militia. Ask for your thoughts on the Twitter machine, on the Facebook. But I always get the best answers on FlickChat. FlickChat, for those of you who have not been paying attention for the last 10 weeks, it's a free app. You can download it. Search, just search Metallicast and you join the group. It's basically a forum. We talk about the podcast. We talk about Metallica. We talk about just metal and music in general. But primarily, we talk about our favorite band, Metallica. I started a topic about the struggle within, asking for thoughts. And as always, Ralph Savetto wrote a long little something that I think will sum up this episode nicely. He writes, "This song to me was the perfect closer for the Black Album. It starts with some excellent Marshall sounding drums provided by Lars, and then the guitars come in echoing that sentiment. They quickly kick into the main riff, which is rather thrashy. Apparently, this was also the last track finished for the album, and Hetfield seems to be venting his frustrations with the arduous process of recording this masterpiece of an album in this particular song and his lyrics, which seem pretty self-explanatory. One can definitely hear just how angry he is over the whole thing in the words used here and his vocal delivery. Kirk provides another excellent solo towards the end of the song. Jason's playing is solid on this one, but not all that spectacular, as he mostly follows along with the main riff after standout performances on the previous two songs. As per usual on the sound, the band as a unit is extremely tight. As great as this song is, though, this might be the most ignored and possibly one of the least played out of all the stellar album closes the band has ever recorded. So if any of the guys are listening, I'm sure they are. They all listen to Metallicast, Ralph. We all know that. Please do me a favor and play this one live for me on the next tour. Hey, I'm all about some deep cuts anyway."
Spot on, man. As usual.
As usual, Ralph delivers. And yes, before you ask, I'm working on getting him on the podcast.
I was about to say he should have his own podcast, but he would just like read his tweet threads and that would be like 2.5 minutes. And it would be like, "There's your podcast."
Well, which would be brilliant, but then nobody would have a reason to listen to my podcast. Like, wait, we can get all the same information in not even a quarter of the time. And there's no Dave Mustaine impressions. It's perfect.
Cliff Notes minus Mustaine? I mean, how are you going to argue with that?
That should be the name of the podcast. Cliff Notes minus Mustaine with your host, Ralph Savetto.
We just set it up for you, buddy. Get on it.
Oh, that is amazing. Actually, when I have Ralph on the podcast finally, I should just make like a 3-minute episode.
All right, Ralph, go on about X. He talks for about 2.5-3 minutes. All right, that was Metallicast. See you next week.
Last week, Nick was like, "Why did we even do this? We could have had this all done in the first 2 minutes." And you just read that. But I, you know, Ralph in his writing makes references to the other Metallica closers. And, you know, this one I think does get lost in the shuffle a little bit, despite it being on their best-selling record. But I'm going to go on record and say this. I like this song. I think it is a perfect closer for this record, as Ralph worded it. I think it fits with the vibe of this record. You know, it's largely, you know, it's very simple and concise and to the point, which is exactly what they were trying to accomplish in the Black Album, from start to finish. But with all that said, if I have to rank all the album closers, I think The Struggle Within is my least favorite.
Yeah, I could see that, except for what closes Saint Anger. Richard, where are you? Richard?
I would even put All Within My Hands ahead of Struggle Within, because I honestly think All Within My Hands is a standout on the Saint Anger album. And if I think if you heard that track, I would like them to do a live version of that, not the acoustic version, because I feel like if you hear, I feel like if that song would get a lot more love if you stripped away the Saint Anger production, and if you heard it like kind of more of like a traditional Metallica song, I think it would get more love than it does.
Oh, I definitely agree with that, because when they play the stuff live, I'm a lot warmer to that than the album version. So I definitely get that, but I would still take Struggle over All Within My Hands every day of the week.
Yeah. Which I can respect the fact that you're wrong.
Do you watch the live performances? They're fantastic. And they look like they're having a lot of fun playing it too.
Yeah. Well, I say that across the board. I mean, if I watched them play Into Salmon from the last show that they did in Europe, it's going to look like they have tons of fun playing that too, you know?
True.
I think that's one of the beauties of this band. I'm going to put you on the spot again, Kevin, and then you can put me on the spot with a reply. Your favorite Metallica closer?
Oh, man.
Could be from any album.
I have to go with Damage Incorporated.
Yeah, I have to go with Damage Inc. too, just because Master Puppets is my favorite record. But I would say that Dire's Eve would be a close second for me.
Dire's Eve is real good. I mean, a bunch of the closers are just so right next to each other, it's hard to pick. It would probably change if you asked me on a different day, to be honest.
Yeah, and I would actually put Outlaw Torn and Fixer up near the top two.
Oh, Outlaw Torn is one of my favorites, like overall Metallica, even.
Yeah.
You know, album version or S&M version, like it's way up there for me.
Yeah. I love that track. I think there's so much great atmosphere in that song. I love the lyrics. I don't know if it was like composed or improvised, but it definitely has an improvised feel at certain parts. With like the guitar at the end, it's like more jammy than what you normally hear from Metallica. I just think there's a lot of cool elements in that track, and I'm excited for them to do it at S&M too, because they have to.
You would think, at least, like especially if they're gonna bring it out on the tour they're doing, you would think that that's practice.
Right. Exactly.
Sorry, Tom Cui.
I just love when you or Nick come on the show, because there's always a jab at Tom.
I think he's awesome. I love talking with him.
Yeah, and I just literally like within a half hour before recording this, I saw on Twitter that for his Patreon members, he's repackaging the old episodes as a like an album package. So like, for example, singing all the Ride the Lightning songs and doing it as like one thing, which is a really cool idea. So it's all Metallica podcast love on this end. So I have no problem shouting those guys out. I'm hoping that in the near future we'll be recording something with Tom, but we'll see if that pans out with our schedules.
Right on. He's got to be tired of me. I've been on there like four times.
Well, when I emailed him, he literally said, as long as you're not Kevin Van Dam.
Yes. When he says, if you haven't been on the podcast before, he means, as long as you're not Kevin Van Dam, you're welcome on the show.
Yeah. Anything we missed about the struggle with, and anything you want to add on about Metallica in general, KVD, that we should explore before we wrap this bad boy up?
The only note I still have that I haven't crossed off was backup vocals live. They didn't perform it while Jason was in the band. So it's all up to Rob and Kirk. And I'm sorry, this is a common comment, especially for me, but I don't think it's up to snuff.
Yeah, if funny, during Of Wolf and Man, we had this conversation. And, you know, I will say, I think I'll say it again. As much love as Jason Newsted gets, as long as he was in the band, for all the hits and big albums that he played on, I think he's the most underrated member to have ever played for Metallica.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying this as a knock against his bass abilities, because he's an amazing bassist. Different style than Cliff Burton, different style than Robert Trujillo. And I actually prefer the style of those two basses and Cliff Burton. I mean, I can't even put anybody in the same sentence as Cliff Burton on that level. Mm-hmm. But more so than his stellar bass playing and just how tight it was and how crisp it was and how much of like a great rhythmic unit he created with Lars Ulrich during his time as the band. More so than that, those background vocals are, I think, the biggest missing piece from the current Metallica live show. And I say that as somebody who thinks 2019 Metallica probably as a whole is performing better than most of Jason's run with the band, to be honest. But those background vocals are missed.
Oh yeah. There's a whole other level that adds. And, you know, I give Rob props all the time because that's not a thing he like does just naturally. So the fact that he was just like, yeah, I'll lean into it. He's gotten a lot better. I like him. You know, he's an amazing bassist, but yeah. You know, Newsted just has the talent for that. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, the best way to sum it up is Rob and Kirk both have to do it. So whenever you need yeah. people doing what one person used to do before, and you can still hear it's not quite as good. No. I mean, that speaks volumes about Jason's role in that department.
Yeah. Yeah. Love Jason.
Yeah. And I think too, in a lot of ways, the Black Album is kind of his shining moment in the band, not to take away from anything else he did with the group, but I think Injustice for All, obviously we don't need to go into detail about this. It's been talked by us and everybody else, but it just has that lack of low end, has that lack of a bass in the mix. And so for him, you know, one studio album later, to have such a rich bass sound, such a like well-rounded low end, a well-balanced low end of this record was really superb. And, you know, he has My Friend of Misery, which is, you know, that bass line's all his composition. So and I think his shining moment in the band as a songwriter, and one of his shining moments in the band as a performer. And that's, you know, there's a lot of moments in this album where the bass really gets to shine, whether it's that quick bass break in Holier Than Thou or the bass intro to The God That Failed. I think more so than any of the records that came after, even with like a heavy bass presence, I think just from start to finish, this is his shining moment in the group.
Yeah, there's a synergy on the Black Album that's pretty special. So, and he's definitely a part of that.
Yeah. And, you know, people can say, oh, what if Cliff was still in the group and this and that? And it's like saying, well, what if they had a better technical drummer than Lars Ulrich? Like, it would not be Metallica. It would not be the same album. You know, it's all the pieces together that make it's all the pieces together that make this band sound like Metallica, but the sound each album, that gives each album its own unique sound. Because, well, I mean, well, I think you could put on any Metallica album and you're going to be like, oh, yeah, that's Metallica. I mean, each one has its own flavor. You know, Hardwired has a different flavor than Death Magnetic, which has a different flavor than Saint Anger, which has a different flavor than Load and Reload. And you can just keep on going through the whole catalog. And I love Load. I love Reload. I loved the cover records. But I just feel like this is when it gelled the best in terms of like the four of those guys. And this was just so many bright moments for the band, obviously, with all these massive hits and, you know, best-selling record and da-da-da-da-da. But I think Jason gets lost in the mix a lot of times because it's easy to focus on the guitar solo. It's easy to focus on Lars because he never shuts up. It's easy to focus on James as, you know, the front man. But, and I think the bassist is sometimes forgotten, but more – you don't forget Cliff Burton because he's Cliff Burton. And I just think, you know, Jason gets lost in the shuffle.
Yeah. And you were saying like it really gelled for this album and you kind of get that same impression with Master of Puppets. So, you know, there are times when Metallica just like is all going in one direction and it ends up being amazing.
Yeah. And the band finds a perfect balance on this record. And I think, you know, it's the drums and the bass that holds it together. So I think Lars and Jason have a lot of to do with this. But on the Black Album, they find the perfect balance of tight and loose. Like Load and Reload are looser records and intentionally so. But the Black Album is that perfect bridge between, you know, the really rigid tightness of like Injustice for All and the more like loose, bouncy, groove-oriented, almost like bluesy jams of Load and Reload.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like Lars's drumming on this album, probably more than any other album. There's just something about it, like you said, there's a looseness there that keeps it relaxed, but, you know, you can do heavy stuff like Sad But True, and you can do a kind of slower backbeat to Struggle Within while there's, you know, James doing his right-hand thing. And it just gives its own flavor to this album that is not on the other albums.
Yeah, I agree. And I said this before too, but I'll mention it again since I think this is kind of a cool way to, we're doing this by accident, not by design. It's ended up to be kind of a cool way to wrap up this whole little 10-week anthology about the Black Album. But I think this is really like the first time you get that signature Lars drum sound on record. Where like all like when you hear his snare, when you hear his bass drum, when you hear that set, you know it's Lars. And I feel like this is when he really starts embodying and developing that signature sound of his.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that. And I think it was kind of like fortuitous that they got Bob Rock, and you know, all the other albums, Lars is always like looking for this sound or that sound, or, you know, we need Mike Klink for this. Like he finally found a dude that could like blend it all together and nobody seems left out. Everybody has their part in the mix. Greg Fiddleman's probably the same way. They've like, you know, without Rick Rubin in the mix, we can actually put a little sauce on here and, you know, make it sound really nice.
All right, KVD. Anything else?
No, man, I'm done.
Well, thank you for coming on. Where can everybody find you on the social media? Or do you not want people finding you on the social media?
You'll probably see my Metallica tweets to you or Metal Up Your Podcast, and then we can argue about politics on Twitter.
Everybody's favorite pastime, Metallica and politics on Twitter.
That's right.
You can, of course, follow Metallicast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at MetallicastPod on all three. Please download the app. I'll mention again, FlickChat. It's free, completely free. It's a new app. I'm not being paid to say any of this. I wish I was, but I'm not. It's just something I stumbled upon through another podcast that I was listening to, and it seemed cool, so I checked it out for myself, and I was able to kind of get in early, but it's a developing brand new app. But the gist, I think they're going to be adding a lot of bells and whistles as time goes on. But the gist of it is, It's a forum. So if you like chatting on the Met Club forums or, you know, being a part of Metallica Twitter or anything like that or Facebook groups or whatever, this is the perfect spot for you. Download the app, search the code Metallicast, and we have almost daily conversations about upcoming episodes, past episodes, or the latest Metallica news or whatever else. And if nothing else, it's another spot you can go and shit on Tommy Trink. So download the app for free. Search Metallicast. Of course, please download, subscribe the podcast. Leave a positive review for us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us there on Google, Stitcher, fansonexpress.com. Anywhere you find your podcast, Metallicast is available. If you are into black metal, more extreme metal, I have a few episodes out of a second podcast I started with my buddy Greg called the Corpse Paint Podcast. And it's really just a bunch of silly nonsense. But it's basically us drinking, playing a David Ellison drinking game. If you want to know what the David Ellison drinking game is, then get some booze and listen and follow along. It's really easy to play. And you will hopefully be hammered by the end of the episode. And we just listen to black metal and talk about it. Some of it we like, some of it we do not like. But we break it down in a very casual, fun, and goofy way. And that can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google, or anywhere else. And, yeah, I think that is it. I guess the only other note I can make is that Black Summer is unfortunately done. I am back at my day job after summer break, which means Metallicast will be back to being once a month. If I can do a second one here or there, I will. If I can do a mini, I will. But I'm guaranteeing you one a month, and hopefully I do not get too sidetracked when baby Hetfield Metallicast comes in a couple months. Kevin, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's always a blast having you on. We just need to have you on more often.
Hey, I'm glad to come back whenever you need me.
Sounds good, KVD. Thank you again. And as always, I want to end with a cover. Not a lot of Struggle Within covers out there, believe it or not. But I did find one from Sodom, the legendary thrash band from Germany. This is, like many of the other ones I've played in the Black Summer series, from the Metal Hammer, a tribute to the Black Album. So this is Sodom doing The Struggle Within. Till next time, ladies and gentlemen, metal up your ass. Yeah!
Turning into a FabNod experts.